On the season one finale of Balance and Manifest, Your Rise to Greatness, we are joined by Dr. Gabe Frank from the Frank Institute to talk all things testosterone. Dr. Frank started his journey in medicine in the field of neurosurgery. After realizing he was seeing people on their worst days and that he wanted to truly help people get better, Dr. Frank did a fellowship in neurorehabilitation and finally found his passion with hormone therapy. Dr. Frank walks us through the important roles testosterone plays in our bodies, some of the causes, signs, and symptoms of low testosterone, and the amazing benefits of hormone replacement therapy. Sit back and enjoy as we take a deep dive into the forbidden conversation of men's health and low testosterone with Dr. Gabe Frank. Welcome to another episode of Balance and Manifest, Your Rise to Greatness, the podcast where our guests share their stories of overcoming hardship and fighting their way to success to help inspire and motivate others. I am your host, Sean, and I might be flying solo tonight. Savannah's with baby, putting her down, so she might pop on later if baby goes to sleep. And thank you guys for joining us on this will be our season one finale, so we're really excited about this. If you can do us a favor on your favorite podcast platform, give us a follow, subscribe, like, listen to this episode, share it. We'd love to get this information out to as many people as possible. And as always, podcast is presented by Nine Realms Athletics. Follow ninerealmsathletics.com. Check us out Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok. Use promo code MANIFEST at ninerealmsathletics.com on your next order. So like I said, this is going to be the season one finale, and we're super excited. This was one of the first topics that I actually wrote down that I wanted to do when we came up with the idea of this show. And today, we have special guest, Dr. Frank from the Frank Institute. How you doing, Doc?
Good, man. How are you doing?
I am doing great. I'm, like I said, I'm super excited for this episode. When I thought of this, this was one of the very first ones, and when I talked to you probably about a month ago, I was like, I don't know if he'll be able to, super busy, but got to put it out in the universe and see what happens.
Well, I'm honored that you would ask me to come on the podcast, man. So I definitely made time for it because I know it's important, and I just appreciate the opportunity to come on and talk about what I do.
Awesome. Yeah, so for everyone listening, we're going to talk about a topic that a lot of people don't want to discuss. So we're going to talk about it, and that's men's health, and in specific, we're going to talk about low testosterone, testosterone replacement therapy, and all things surrounding that. So real quick, if you could give your credentials and kind of your history of how you got started in medicine and got started in men's health in particular.
Yeah, I guess I'll kind of give a short background on my life. I was born and raised outside of Chicago. I went to undergrad in Wisconsin where I played basketball. And I actually played professional basketball for 3 seasons before I went to medical school. I went to medical school at Jefferson Medical College in Philadelphia. And I started my career and I matched out of medical school as a neurosurgeon. I started as a brain surgeon. I got about halfway through my training and I realized that was not the right specialty for me. Well, I loved the medicine and I loved the surgery. I'm a very positive person. And neurosurgery, unfortunately, you're dealing with the worst of the worst. I tell people that every day when I got to the hospital, I knew I was going to meet someone where that day was the worst day of their life. Whether it was a tragic accident or finding out someone has a brain cancer, or it was always something catastrophic. And I realized that no matter how much knowledge I accrued or how good I became at my craft, I wasn't really helping people. And as I left neurosurgery, I kind of looked at myself and I said, you know, why did I go to medical school? Why did I go into medicine? And it was to truly help people get better. And so I left and I did a fellowship in neurorehabilitation. And part of that was understanding endocrine system, and part of it was hormone therapy. That's kind of where I got my first introduction to what I do now. Fast forward a couple years, I opened the Frank Institute for Health and Wellness, which is located in Wilmington, North Carolina, with the idea of truly having a place where people can come and heal, where we treat root cause, where we don't treat symptoms. Like, you know, you go into a, I call it a standard doctor's office. And, you know, you say you have all these different symptoms where they're going to give you something for anxiety, depression, sleep, and they reactively treat you. And I don't think that's right, because that's not how the human body works. My thought process is, what is the root cause? What is causing the issue? Let's figure out what that is, and then let's fix that, and all these other downstream issues will get better because we fixed the actual problem. And people ask me all the time, you know, are you a chiropractor? Are you a naturopathic doctor? No, I'm an MD, fellowship trained, you know, went to a top 25 medical school. Like, this is just my way of looking at it, is there's got to be a better way. And people are just sick and tired of being sick and tired. And it's frustrating for me, because in my practice, I really have enveloped a lot of first responders, a lot of military, a lot of law enforcement. And people don't understand that those guys and the stresses that they're under are so catastrophic that there's no way that their hormone systems can work normally. And, you know, you, like you said in the opening, it's something nobody wants to talk about. Well, you know, I've had the Frank Institute, where I focus on optimizing hormones. I do treat women, but the majority of the patients that I treat are men. And it's optimizing men's hormones so that we can be the best that we can be. It's not about trying to be Superman. It's not about, you know, using steroids or, you know, whatever nonsense that people think of when they think about testosterone. No, this is a medical treatment that is used to optimize the human body so that you feel like you should. And, you know, I have no bones. I tell people, I'm 43 years old. Actually, my family and I were talking about what we were going to do for my birthday. It's in 2 weeks, and I'll be 44. And, you know, I'm on testosterone. I've been on testosterone for a couple of years. And the difference that it's made in my life in terms of how I feel, my cognition, the way that I think, my mood, my sleep, my ability to be a better father, husband, doctor, son, all of the things that encompass me as a man, as a human being, I feel like I'm doing them to the best of my potential because I have my body functioning the way that it should. And unfortunately, because people think about testosterone still as, you know, Barry Bonds and Jose Canseco and these guys that, you know, we're using it for performance enhancing. That's not what I do.
Yeah.
It's all about getting guys to feel the way that they should.
So because in the work you do, what is the, because I get it, but it's still kind of hard for me to understand why it's such a unspoken thing, like why people don't want to talk about it. What is the common thing you hear when you talk to patients of like why it took so long, or is it embarrassment? Is it a social thing? What is the barrier that men have that keep them from wanting to talk about it? Because I personally, I don't have an issue talking to people about it. The way I look at it is it's probably normal. Everybody has issues. If I'm feeling a certain way, I'm not the only one. So might as well talk about it.
That's a good question. It's actually a question I get very often. And it's a combination of things. The first thing is, I think guys are embarrassed. They don't want to admit that they can't do what they did. Like I'm a country music fan, and the Toby Keith song, Good As I Once Was, right? Guys still want to think that they're as good as they once was, right? I can still do that. You know, I can still do what I did 20 years ago. And, you know, I'm still the same. No, I don't have any of these symptoms. No, my testosterone is fine, because testosterone is what makes us men. And if we admit the fact that maybe our testosterone levels aren't what they should be, you know, is that a way of admitting weakness or admitting that we're not as much of a man as we want to be, which are complete ridiculousness. Yeah. I can tell you from experience that I have the most macho of men who come into my clinic. I have special forces. I have alpha males. I have CEOs of Fortune 500 companies, and I have garbage men and everybody in between. And I can tell you it doesn't matter. When all that bravado and all that stuff that is a roadblock to coming and seeing me, all that stuff melts away when you finally realize that you can't do what you need to do on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Forget about what you'd like to do. You can't function. And, you know, all that stuff goes away. And once guys come into my clinic or I talk to them on the phone, you know, I try to impart to them that they're not alone. And I do, and I will very, very frequently, and usually early in the conversation, tell guys I'm on testosterone. And I tell them my story. You know, it's like, hey, I was fat and out of shape, and I was miserable, and I was exhausted, and I was irritable, and all the things that you read about, like, I experienced, because my testosterone is 224. And, you know, it should be closer to 800 to 1100. If you look at the research, that's the ideal range. And, you know, I was nowhere close to that. So I know how you feel. And I say that to guys. I'm like, look, I've been in your shoes. I know all the things that you're feeling. I felt. And a lot of times I can finish these guys' sentences for them because I know how they feel.
Yeah.
So, you know, it strips the armor away to be like, hey, look, you know, this is a place where you can come and I understand. Okay, you're not alone. And I cannot stress that enough to your listeners. To your male listeners, you are not alone. There are tens of millions of men in America that need to be on hormone replacement therapy, and a fraction of them are because they don't realize that they need to be.
Yeah, and I say that when I talk to buddies of mine from work as a first responder, that I don't know studies and stats, but I'm going to guess that a vast majority of men in this profession should probably be on hormone therapy, because this job takes a massive toll mentally and physically. What is it that you, because you said you see a lot of first responders, law enforcement, military, what is it about those specifically that, if you know or think, affects testosterone levels on such a magnitude of those professions?
It's two things. One, first and foremost, it's the stress. The human body is not meant to be under the stress that you guys put yourself under day in and day out. Cortisol response, the fight or flight syndrome, is meant to be used very infrequently. And, you know, in your line of work, it's used much more frequently than it should be. And your system burns out. You just run out of gas. So that's the first thing. The second thing is traumatic brain injury. And it could be something as simple as you play football in high school and you got your bell rung a couple times, or, you know, you've been in some fights, or, you know, training. I've had guys who have been IED blasts, or guys who are breachers. And that, the combination of those two things, is by far the most common reason that I have found that early to mid 30s men come into my clinic that should not be in there, but come in with testosterone levels a quarter of what they should be.
Yeah. And that's crazy. I remember going to my primary care and getting tested over the span. I got tested a few times over the span of, say, I think 4 years, because I started noticing changes in my body. And every time I would get tested, they would go, oh, you're normal. Your levels are normal. And when I heard about you, on another podcast, and you were talking, you stressed the difference between normal and optimal. So can you explain what the difference is between those? Because normal, quote unquote, in like the textbooks is such a big range. I think when I finally started my therapy, I was like you, in the low twos. And every time up till that, doctors kept saying, you're normal. And I'm like, I don't feel normal. I don't feel good.
Yeah.
So what is the difference between normal and optimal?
So those people who know me in my practice know that the best way to make me angriest, the fastest at my office is say the words low normal to me, because I will fly off the handle. because there's no such thing as low normal. Either you're low or you're normal. Mm-hmm. And you know, you spoke about the range, and this normal range is so ridiculous. If you look at Quest Labs or LabCorp, it's the low level is 264 and the high level is 914 and 918. What's that? 400% difference?
That's insane.
So you're telling me my 20-year-old nephew can have a testosterone level of 900 and my 84-year-old father can have a testosterone level of 300 and they're both considered normal?
Yeah.
Give me a freaking break. There's no such thing. The normal range, and I started doing this, like I said, about 5 or 6 years ago. And the normal range, when I started, the bottom was like 350 or 400, and the top was 1100. So in the 5 years that I've been in practice, the major lab companies have lowered what they consider normal. Now, if you stop and think about what that means, is that basically makes that range arbitrary, because they just decided, hey, we're going to lower it. And they did it because American men are becoming more and more unhealthy. I'm seeing guys in my clinic now in their 20s that are coming in with organically low testosterone. So the insurance companies and the lab companies were like, oh, well, this is what we're seeing now, so the range must be changed. So now we must lower the range to incorporate this lower range of patients. Rather than having the opposite, which is what we should be doing, be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Why are 25-year-old men coming in with testosterone levels of 300? What is going on? Why are they so unhealthy? So rather than doing that, they said, we'll just lower the range. So that's why when you say normal, that's a real big umbrella.
Yeah.
Optimal is what you need to be your best. And the optimal range, if you look at the research, starts at about 800. 800 to 1100. That's about where you should run. Now, that can be done in a myriad of ways in terms of dosing and giving medication. That's a whole other topic. But that's the difference between normal and optimal. And you can go, and I can give you experience from my physician, is I went in, and I think the bottom range was 254. I was 256. I had every symptom in the book. And my doctor said, hey, Gabe, you know, your testosterone's 256. You're good. You're in range. And I was like, but I feel terrible, and I'm 2 points away. He said, you're in range. It was, and that's me.
Yeah.
A physician who specializes in hormone therapy being told by his primary care physician, who I have an undying amount of respect for, who is an amazing physician, telling me that I'm within range because I'm 2 points above the bottom number. But here I had literally every single symptom. So when patients come to me, I look at them in the entirety. And I had a patient came in a couple months ago. He was, I would say early 60s. And he literally jumped out of his chair and skipped down the hallway. His testosterone level was 370. And I sat down and he goes, oh my God, is that low? Am I okay? And I said, how do you feel? I said, I feel fantastic. I feel like I'm 30.
Yeah.
He goes, doc, what are you going to do for me? And I laughed. And I said, nothing. He goes, well, my level's on the lower end of normal. I said, that's your normal. You're good. You don't need testosterone because your body's functioning the way that it should with a testosterone level of 370. And he was like, so I'm good? I said, yeah. Stood up, shook his hand, walked out. I said, see you in a year. We'll rerun your lab. Something happens in the meantime, give me a call. And he skipped out and just, you know, that's normal for him. I get guys that come in at 560, 570 and can't get out of bed in the morning. That's low for them.
Yeah.
And so you have to understand that you just can't look at a number, put a check mark next to it, throw it in a pile and say next. Not with this, because there's so much, you know, there's so much that goes into it. So much that you have to understand, from lifestyle to diet to sleep to stress to family history to traumatic brain injury to previous exposures, all this stuff you have to understand in order to really do a good job. So that's, you know, that's a very long answer to what is a pretty straightforward question, is between normal and optimal. And normal, nobody should ever think normal. It's just, what's optimal? What's the best for that particular patient that's sitting in front of you?
Well, it's like you said, you go to your primary care and you go, this is my doctor. I trust them with my life. And the doctor goes, no, you're normal. And again, I ran into that same wall was, you're normal. And I'm like, I think the first time was I was in the mid or high fours. And I'm like, I don't feel normal. Like there's something that's not, like, I don't feel right. And they're like, well, you're normal. Maybe you have sleep apnea. And I'm like, I don't snore. I don't have these. So I sleep apnea test and it comes back negative. And they go, well, maybe take the test again because it could have been a false. And I'm like, I'm not doing that again. Like I'm not normal. Like I don't feel right. So what are some causes? What are the, I know this is probably a broad answer, but what causes low testosterone? Is it, I mean, I'm sure there's a ton, but like environmental, chemical, food, is there behavioral, genetics? Like what are some of the things that cause low testosterone?
How much time do we have?
as much time as you need.
The answer to that is yes. All the things you just said. This is probably the most frustrating thing when guys come to me and I give them this answer, because they ask me, why am I like this? And I tell them, I don't know. And I'll never know, and you'll never know. I mean, outside of having a pituitary tumor or having a massive traumatic brain injury, or, you know, being on, you know, being 25 and running testosterone anabolics for the better part of 5 years without something just glaring like that, never straightforward. Is it genetics? Yes. Is it environment? Absolutely. You know, here in Wilmington, they're dumping something called Gen X in the water. Gen X is an estrogen disruptor, an endocrine disruptor, mm-hmm. and an estrogen agonist. And so you take that, and now you take the food that we eat, which is loaded with organophosphates and steroids and antibiotics and all this other stuff. And, you know, and I'm not one of those people that says you have to, you know, grow your own food. And no, that's not practical. I have three little kids. They're 10, 7, and 5.
Yeah.
You know, I love to feed them completely organic food all the time. Yes, but it's not practical. And so, you know, you can't get away from it. You cannot get away from the food that we eat. It's poor quality food across the board, no matter what you do. There's environmental stuff, like you said. There's habitual stuff. There's, you know, lack of sleep. There's high stress. There's alcohol. There's drug use. There's, I mean, you name it. Everything that you do just beats up your endocrine system. But if I had to, If you painted me into a corner and you said, what's probably the number one thing? And I would probably say it's environmental and it's food. Those are probably the two big things that for me, I'm seeing, and inactivity. That's the other one. And body mass, too much fat, basically. Yeah. Those are the things that are probably driving this new pandemic that I'm seeing in these young men. And it worries me. I mean, I have a 5-year-old son. You know, what does this mean for him? You know, what can I do now? And I've had fathers ask me, okay, you know, what can I do for my son? So, you know, these are things that we're going the wrong way when it comes to the endocrine system. And I think a lack of understanding of the endocrine system by society and by physicians is not bringing to light the real problems that we're having here. I mean, I'm reading studies that, you know, people are saying that, you know, there's going to be sterility issues in men by 2050. You know, the World War II generation, the average testosterone level was 1,500.
Holy gee.
For the men that went and fought in World War II, that was the average testosterone level. Average testosterone level now, I think, it's got to be in the 500s, I think. And I'm drawing a blank on the exact numbers, but it's pretty darn significant. And this is a trend going the wrong way.
Yeah, and that's crazy to me that you said that now you have these labs, doctors, scientists that are going, that are, instead of attacking the cause and the root, they just lower the expectation to meet instead of trying to figure out the root cause, which to me, I don't like using this term, and I'm not saying it because this is going around a lot lately, but it seems anti-scientific to me to be attacking instead of trying to figure out what the cause is, just going, we'll just lower the standard.
Because it's so overwhelming trying to tackle this, because it has to affect literally every part of our life.
Yeah.
And we as physicians are struggling to keep people healthy just the way it is, and to keep a status quo for a patient. Not all doctors are as lucky as I am. I find myself extraordinarily fortunate to do what I do and to be able to treat patients the way that I do. Not every doctor has that luxury.
Yeah.
A lot of doctors are part of large hospital systems, or part of large practices where they're protocol driven and they have people to answer to. I don't have anyone to answer to. It's called the Frank Institute for a reason. It's me. I'm growing. I'm bringing on new providers, but it's just me. Like, I don't have to answer to anybody. I don't have a CEO to answer. I don't have a regional medical director to answer to. You know, I can do things that I know are in the best interest of the patient. It's also why I don't take insurance. I refuse to play the game of someone who doesn't understand the person that's sitting in front of me. And if I want to put someone on testosterone, I don't want to have to go through these 3 or 4 medications that are pre-authorized or that are prior approved and go through a prior authorization. I'm wasting months and hundreds of dollars of the patient's money. Mm-hmm. And so I don't take any insurance. I don't take any insurance for the medications that I prescribe or the labs that I draw. But I also have done a trade-off where I work very, very hard to keep the price as low as humanly possible.
Yeah.
I realize that excludes some patients, and I understand that, but I can't do the right thing by the patient with someone looking over my shoulder, and I refuse to.
No, that it's honorable and fair. You're staying true to you and what the reason you got into this field of medicine specifically. It's to help people, and you're cutting out the red tape and the bureaucracy and all the, like you said, answering to somebody else, and you're doing what's in the best need of the patient, which is what all medicine should be. Real quick, this could probably be an extremely long answer, but real quick, as short as possible, what is testosterone, estrogen, and what roles do they play in the body? And the reason I ask estrogen is because there are females who have hormone therapy, but estrogen can have, you know, negative effects on the testosterone levels, and they kind of work in conjunction with each other. So just kind of in a nutshell, how do those things work with the body?
And that's a question that people spend careers studying. I will give you the very quick answer. So I said earlier, testosterone is what makes men men. It's what's responsible for secondary sex characteristics that make us men. But testosterone is also equally important in women. So all women need testosterone, just like all men need estrogen. Estrogen in men is important. It's protective. It's brain protective. It's heart protective. It's protective for healthy bones. So there's function of all the hormones. It's the ratio and the levels that are important. And in men, having a healthy and robust testosterone level is responsible for proper cognitive, right? Proper brain function, proper body function, muscle, heart, mental clarity and focus, attitude, drive, libido, erectile function. All of these things are important. And you have to, let me back up a little bit on that one. All men convert testosterone into estrogen. It's a normal body process. Some men, when they go on testosterone, they convert more estrogen than they should. And you can get estrogen symptoms, right? The first one, everyone's like, oh, I have nipple tenderness, or I'm becoming very emotional. But there's more to it than that. You can get ankle swelling. Or it can be something as subtle as, hey, doc, I was doing great for 6 or 7 weeks, and now I'm not doing as good. And because the balance, the estrogen will actually draw away some of the positive benefits of the testosterone. And so you have to, as a physician, you have to understand that balance. And you have to find that kind of that sweet spot. And there's ways to adjust it. There's ways to change testosterone dosing, for example. So, you know, if you're doing injections, you do smaller injections more often, or you space them out differently. Or we talk about, you know, different ways to metabolize the estrogen using a supplement called DIM, or this is somewhat controversial, the use of estrogen blockers like anastrozole. And so that's it's understanding how those play into each other. Now, in the female patients, it's the same thing, but you have to add in their progesterone, because that's also an important factor as well.
Okay.
So, you know, understanding how all of these things interrelate is really the best way to understand, like you said, what testosterone and estrogen does for the body. Yeah. That's kind of the best way I can explain it quickly without boring your listeners with way too much minutiae. You need to find a doctor that understands how all of these things work, and more importantly, is willing to sit down and take the time to talk to you and to understand what's going on with you.
No, that's perfect. 100%. Just to give people kind of a little, you know, breakdown. It's one of those things we hear about, but even the word testosterone is kind of demonized now. So it's hard for people to, I guess, kind of understand the importance of it in the body, because they're, for some reason, there's like these negative connotations sometimes in certain, you know, places and areas, whatever, with the word testosterone. So it's good to know, you know, kind of just have a brief knowing and understanding of how it works. What are some of the low, or some of the symptoms of, and I know there's a lot of them, of low testosterone?
So these are ones that are pretty consistent across the board. And there's ones that you think of, right? You think of moodiness, you think of low energy, you think of low libido or sex drive, you think of erectile issues. But there's more to it. There's the cognitive function. There's the ability to think clearly. There's increase in brain fog, difficulty with memory, difficulty with word finding. You'll be in the middle of a sentence and you'll forget what you were about to say, or you lose your train of thought. There's sleep. That's a big one. That's probably one of the things that my patients are most surprised about, is how much better they sleep. You know, the change in your body, the reduction of muscle and the increase in abdominal fat. And the moodiness is another big one. Guys will become very cranky and very irritable. I will ask my patients that are fathers, like, oh, how's your mood? It's okay. And, you know, maybe a little bit of depression, kind of a loss of joy, a loss of excitement. And I'll ask, I'm like, oh, do you have any irritability? And I'm like, no, not really. I'm like, you snap at your kids a little more quickly? Oh, yeah, I do. Okay, that's irritability. That's a big thing. And one of the very common misconceptions is that going on testosterone will make your irritability worse. And I have hundreds and hundreds of patients that can attest to the exact opposite.
Yeah.
And that will make them more calm. It's actually a very common question I get from patient spouses is, you know, he's already super irritable and super moody. Is the testosterone going to make him worse? No, it's not. It's not. I would say in pretty darn near 100% of my patients, their mood improves significantly.
Well, and that comes from that misconception. And we'll just go into that is people, I'm sure people ask you a lot, and I know people have asked me, is this like taking steroids?
Funny, my brother, I have two older brothers, and my oldest brother called me yesterday and had a guy on the phone and said, hey, you know, my brother's a hormone doctor. And my brother said, oh, this guy said it's just like taking steroids. And I said, it is. And my brother was silent on the other end of the phone. He's like, what? It is. There's a difference. There's a difference between how you take the medication. Mm-hmm. Testosterone cypionate, which is what I prescribe almost 100% of the time, there is no difference than the testosterone cypionate that you and I take versus the testosterone cypionate that the bodybuilder takes. There's no difference. It's the exact same medication. But you're looking at the difference in a therapeutic or an optimization dose between 100 and 200 milligrams a week versus 1,000 milligrams a week.
Yeah.
And you're looking at the difference between what is pretty much like a bioidentical form of testosterone versus these designer anabolic steroids, these things like DECA, and some of these other crazy ones, Trenbolone. I've gotten quite the education because I have a lot of former bodybuilders that I see now who have told me, I used to be on all this stuff, and I'm writing it down, and then, you know, when I go back into my office, I'm Googling it to see what the heck it is because I've never even heard of it.
Yeah.
You don't get taught that a lot in medical school. So, is it the same medication? Yeah. I'll be very honest with you. It's the exact same thing. But it's the way that it's done. And it's the goal of the treatment. Everyone thinks testosterone and steroids, again, because look at the baseball players in the 80s and 90s. I joke and I say Barry Bonds and Balco did more to hurt what I do for a living than anything else.
Yeah.
Because everyone thinks, oh, you're on testosterone, what are you trying to get jacked? No. Not what we're doing here. We're restoring, regenerating, and bringing into optimization a man's body. That's it. It's not real complicated.
Yeah.
But conceptually, that's all we're doing.
Well, I think people, the misconception comes from people think it's the same as, you know, hopping over to Tijuana and getting, you know, vials of D-ball and going back to, you know, or buying them from the guy in the locker room at the gym. Yeah. And it's the substance. Like you said, you can take the cypionate and you can, just magnify your dosage and get the same effect. But that's not the purpose of it. I'm not on it to try to get jacked and bit like, I want to feel like a normal human being and I want to feel, mm-hmm. I don't want to feel, you know, at 37, I don't want to feel like I'm 70 and, you know, tired and low sex drive and, you know, foggy brained and all those things. So but I think people think of it as that, like I said, like buying it from a guy in a trench coat in a dark alley and, you know, and hiding it.
Exactly. It's nothing to be ashamed of.
So are there any extreme or uncommon symptoms that you've seen that hormone therapy has solved or helped?
I'm trying to think some of the crazier cases I've had. Nothing. There are, and of course, you can ask me questions. I can't think of anything off
That's
the top
okay.
of my head. For my male patients, for my female patients, I've actually had my female patients whose cycles are horrible and their PMS is just brutal. And it's gotten better. Oh, that's the one I was thinking of. Migraine headaches.
Interesting.
I found that migraine headaches will get better with testosterone therapy. I have also found that, and this is one I forgot to talk about when you asked me about symptoms, joint pain. I've had patients with rheumatoid arthritis, with psoriatic arthritis, that have been able to decrease the amount of medication they're on because one of the benefits of testosterone is the production of synovial fluid. Synovial fluid is basically the lubrication in the joint. You will see an increase in synovial fluid production. And I've had guys that are in chronic pain be able to get off of pain medication or reduce pain medication or reduce RA medication. Those are ones where, you know, I'll see them at their 3 month follow up, and they'll be like, "Doc, I'm taking half of my medication," and I'm a terrible poker player, and I'll be like, "Oh, really?" But you know, meanwhile, I should be the doctor, and be like, "Oh yeah, I knew that was going to happen. I had no freaking idea that was going to happen."
Yeah.
That's not something that normally happens, but you know, sometimes the human body, when it's out of homeostasis, when it's out of balance, you get disease processes that have flared up or that are worse than they should be. And when you bring the body back into optimization, some of those disease processes become less severe. And I've seen it. I mean, it doesn't happen all that often, but enough for me to tell you, it's like, hey, you know, I've come across it enough.
Are any of these symptoms, and this might be kind of a difficult one, and the reason I ask is because I think you and I had a conversation on an appointment that I had like some overlapping symptoms with some other issues. Are there symptoms for the listeners that are associated with other conditions that would cause people to overlook low testosterone as an answer?
Absolutely. Mental health is a big one. Anxiety and depression. A lot of times it's misdiagnosed as anxiety and depression when it's really a causation of low testosterone. I will see, again, in my military guys, I'll see guys who are post-concussive syndrome, that the symptoms that they're associating with the post-concussive syndrome are actually due to the testosterone or due to low testosterone as a result of the traumatic brain injury.
Yeah.
So, you know, you kind of have this two-headed monster where which one is it? And unfortunately, not a lot of people, or almost nobody, will say, "Hey, what's your testosterone level? Hey, maybe we should check that." They're going to try and put them on all these different kind of medications. They're going to put them on stimulants, antidepressants, sleep medicine, all this other stuff. And they're going to go a year or 2 years and not feel any better. And then they're going to land in my clinic somehow. And I'm going to be like, "Hey, you checked your testosterone level?" And they look at me like I got six heads. And they're like, "No. I've been to 5 different doctors. Nobody's even brought it up. I run their level and it's 180. And I get them on testosterone and their symptoms become 80% better. So it's not always the testosterone, but
yeah,
it's something that needs to be looked at. But the mental health one is really a big one that I see that a lot of other doctors miss the boat on. And not because it's anybody's fault, but that's not what they're trained. They're not trained to look. I mean, I think any lab panel for a man over the age of 40 could automatically have a full hormone panel associated with it automatically, because you could catch so many issues early on that we could fix where, you know, it doesn't get too far down the line and then it becomes much more difficult to reverse.
Yeah. It's funny you say that with the blood panel and testing. I had gone to primary care and to get blood work done. And I told them that I wanted to get my levels checked, and they were almost offended that I was asking and coming to them. Because I had gone, and I have a different doctor now, but I had gone to them before and got my levels checked, and they said, "You're normal." And this is when I had been working with you. And I was like, "Hey, I need to get my levels checked to see how," and there was pushback. They almost didn't want to order the blood work. So it's a weird thing getting pushback from your doctor when you say, "Hey, I have insurance. I want to check this because I want to see what's wrong with me and see if this is improving, you know, with this therapy." It's kind of weird that there's doctors that don't want to do that.
And there's a lot of doctors that don't want to do that. And it's for a multitude of reasons. And the one that I found to be most common is that, you know, if you're 33 or 34, you don't have testosterone. The only reason you want testosterone is so that you can get jacked in the gym. There are other physicians that say this. I have a lot of very good friends that are internal medicine doctors and primary care doctors. And I have this discussion with them. Like, "Guys, y'all need to be checking testosterone levels. Free and total and FSH and LH and estrogen. You should be and everybody over the age of 40. And I get a myriad of answers in response. Some of them are not so pleasant. And they just basically say, "No, I don't. No, you don't need to, because they're going to take the attitude that you're in normal range.
Yeah.
And even if you're not in normal range, very few primary care doctors, because they must know so much about so much, very rarely will they take the initiative to treat people with testosterone appropriately. You know, or if they do it, they're going to do it like they did 30 years ago, and they're going to give you 1 cc of testosterone every 2 weeks, which is great if you want to shut down your natural production and not actually help anything.
Yeah.
Fantastic. That's a great dosing schedule. And that's what doctors do, and they'll say, oh, well, that's all I'm willing to do. Or they'll come up to a certain level in terms of the amount of testosterone they'll give, and then they won't go any higher despite the patient needing it. And it's a comfort level. And in a way, it's good, because a good doctor knows what he's good at and what he's not good at.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, that's not the attitude. It's brushed off because, again, the stigma of testosterone permeates into medicine as well. And, you know, doctors don't want to deal with it. They don't want to think about it. They don't want to have to deal with what they think are potential side effects. And, you know, oh, it causes prostate cancer. No, it doesn't. Last 20 years of research proves that it does not cause prostate cancer. It doesn't cause heart attacks. It doesn't cause stroke.
Yeah.
It doesn't. The research is extremely strong at this point, disproving that. But doctors are still going to hang their head. Oh, you don't want to be on testosterone, causes prostate cancer. Really? How you feel, you sports fan? No, it doesn't. There's 150 studies that I have sitting right here that I can show you that what's wrong. You're basing it on one study that was a crappy study done 40 years ago that every doctor hangs their hat on. Said, oh, it causes prostate cancer. Okay. You know what? Just send them over to me. I'll handle it.
Yeah.
Because if you do it the right way, if you do it conservatively, if you do it responsibly, if you monitor the patients closely like I do, the risk of these medications is very, very, very low. Is it zero? Of course not. Can you have side effects? Absolutely. But done responsibly, again, and conservatively, you mitigate that risk as much as possible. And, you know, you understand, hey, look, you know, this isn't all sunshine and rainbows. Sometimes things can go south, but you educate the patient, and you as a physician take responsibility to monitor the patient. If you have a good doctor-patient relationship and good communication, that's key. And you know, I mean, you know with me, communication is the key. There's about three or four different ways patients can reach out and get to me. It was a lot easier, you know, when I didn't have quite as many patients. I could respond a lot faster, but, you know, I mean, it's getting to be 10 o'clock here. And after I get off the show with you, I'm going to open my computer and I'm going to answer an email from patients and I'm going to respond to people's questions because it's important.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is a Friday night. And, you know, but that's what it takes to manage people the right way and to do the right thing. And that's what I do, and that's what I'm willing to do, and that's what I'll continue to do.
That's awesome that you've stepped into your own and stepping away from doctors and educating doctors who obviously are very intelligent, but your specification is something that's new. So, I mean, what is testosterone replacement therapy exactly?
So testosterone replacement, hey, man, how are you?
Hi.
testosterone replacement therapy or testosterone optimization therapy is exactly that. It's taking the testosterone system in a man's body and bringing it back where it should be, bringing it back to where the symptoms are resolved, the health and wellness of the patient is of the utmost concern, and the side effects are mitigating as much as possible. But it's about getting that man or that woman who's you're looking at hormone therapy for women. It's getting them to where their body should be. And if we strip away all the fluff and all the circumstance and all the pomp and everything that's associated and all the great marketing that goes on with eugenics and all this other crap, if you strip all that away, that's the key. If you boil down optimization therapy, that's what it is. It's bringing your body to the level of where it should be so it can function the way that it was meant to.
Yeah, absolutely. It's below where it should be. It's not like you're at the levels you should be and then you're going past that. You're just bringing it back to where people are actually going to function and live their daily lives as well as they can.
And that's exactly correct. it's not, I don't do performance enhancing. And I've had people come into my office and, you know, I run their testosterone levels and they're 700. Well, I want to be 1500. Why?
Yeah.
Well, because that's where I put on the most muscle. Yeah, no, that's not what I do here.
Yeah, yeah.
Here's your money back. Have a nice day.
Right.
No, I've had professional athletes ask me for things like growth hormone and things like testosterone therapy in the off season, and I have turned them down because that's not what I do.
Right.
I don't supercharge people. that's irresponsible and that's bad medicine and it's dangerous. It's also illegal. No, I get, take me for example, 43-year-old guy, horribly low testosterone level. My doctor has me right where I should be. Feeling great. You know, my testosterone level at before my injection is about 800. Right after my injection is about 1100. And that's where I stay and that's where I live and I feel great.
And that's exactly how it should be, is you feel like a normal operating man and human being. How does, when you're on hormone therapy or testosterone replacement therapy or optimization, whatever term, I hear them all and I think they're kind of interchangeable. When you're on like testosterone replacement therapy, how does it work in the body? I know this could be quite a long answer, but just in a nutshell, how does it work? And then what are the benefits, and if there are side effects, what are the side effects of it?
So I think to answer that question, we need to have a very quick physiology lesson.
Yeah.
So two hormones called FSH and LH are produced by the brain, specifically the anterior pituitary. Those are the hormones that actually stimulate your testicles to produce testosterone. It's what's called the biofeedback system. So this is constantly measuring and remeasuring over the course of the day, hundreds of times. And as you need more testosterone, the brain produces more FSH and LH. Stimulates your testicles to produce more testosterone. Testosterone goes up in the bloodstream. Your body uses it for whatever reason. And then that use is downgraded or downsized. And now you have too much testosterone. So the FSH and LH is like, whoa, they kind of pull the reins back. So you're playing this game of trying to kind of keep your levels where they should be. Well, as we age, that system just doesn't work as well. Whether your brain doesn't put out enough FSH or LH, or your testicles don't produce enough testosterone. And your levels will start dropping depending on what research you read, anywhere between ages of 33 and 35. You will lose about 1% to 2%, up to 5% every year for the rest of your life. Now I have seen much more dramatic drops much more quickly. And what that leads to is what we talked about earlier in terms of the symptoms, the irritability, the exhaustion, the lack of energy, the fatigue, the decreased strength, the mental clarity issues, the mood issues, because the receptors in the body that are there to bring testosterone in to start the cascade, or basically to have testosterone do what it does within the cells, those receptors are empty because there's just not enough testosterone. And so all those body functions that I just listed and everything that relies upon testosterone to work just doesn't work, or doesn't work as well. So you kind of have this Ferrari running on 87 test gas. Mm-hmm. It's just not doing its thing. So the goal of physicians like me is to restore all those body processes to the way they should. And you do that by giving supplemental testosterone. You can give it, there's a myriad of different ways. Most of my patients are on injections. We can do transdermal creams, we can do implantable pellets. Those are really the big ones that I do. And the whole goal of that is to return the amount of testosterone into the body that's necessary for it to function at the optimal level. And so the benefits, and I tell this to my new patients, I say, when you talk about risk and benefit, the benefit is literally complete resolution of your symptoms to where you feel like you did when you were a young man. Now, in terms of risk, there are, of course, there are potentially the more significant risk, like blood clots. That is a risk. It's extraordinarily rare, but you can develop blood clots. The much more common side effects and the much more mild side effects, things like overconversion of testosterone and testosterone. So we need to address that. Things like your body can produce too many red blood cells, and the kind of the slang is it's making your blood thick, right? Your hemoglobin and hematocrit, the measurements of the thickness of the blood or the amount of red blood cells in the blood goes up. And if it gets too high, that's very dangerous. That can cause strokes. That can cause heart attacks. It's not the testosterone. It's kind of a side effect of the testosterone. You can get stuff like acne. You know what I mean? Just kind of not the silly stuff, but the less significant things. One of the common ones that doesn't happen as much as people think is hair loss.
Mm-hmm. I never would have thought of that.
It happens, but it doesn't happen nearly as much as everyone thinks. Mm. You can get testicular shrinkage. As unfeasible as this sounds, it's true. If you don't use it, you lose it. And when you go on testosterone, your brain can't tell the difference between what you inject and what you produce naturally. So your brain's reading testosterone levels of optimal, 800 to 1100. And your brain's like, oh, I have enough testosterone. I'm going to shut down natural production. I'm going to reduce FSH and LH.
Yeah.
Because the testicles aren't being stimulated, they shrink in size. That is true. That does happen. There are ways around that. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was just curious with the is that a neurotransmitter issue where if you're injecting it, then your natural production, is it that communication isn't there anymore?
It's not a neurotransmitter in kind of how you're thinking of it. It's the same concept. It's a biofeedback.
Okay.
The receptors in the brain, basically between the hypothalamus then stimulates the pituitary. And so that access, that signal is just not going nearly as robustly because the body is sensing that it has enough testosterone. So it's just not, and it's a neurotransmitter. Yes, but not in the kind of the medical sense. It's more of the biofeedback system.
Gotcha.
But what you're saying is essentially correct.
Okay.
So I think you were going to, you were segueing into, like you get the shrinkage and, or that can happen. So what other medications, can be taken with, like testosterone to mitigate some of those effects and some of the possible side effects that you can experience?
Well, you literally, that's exactly where I was going to go. so the common one that I use is HCG. And HCG is an injectable medication that has a dual function. It works on the brain to basically continue that pathway, that neurofeedback, that neurotransmitter pathway. It keeps that going in spite of you using testosterone. So you continue to have production of FSH and LH. Now, why that's important for my younger patients who are not like me, who are done having children, one of the side effects to testosterone that I did not mention is that as it reduces FSH and LH, LH specifically is responsible for sperm count. So you'll have a reduction in sperm count. I cannot stress this enough. Testosterone does not make you go sterile. That is a very commonly held misconception. That is not true. If you are on testosterone, guys, and you are worried about getting your significant other pregnant, don't think that being on testosterone is birth control, because it's not. Because you're going to, 9 months later, you're going to have a pretty significant surprise. Where you're like, Dr. Frank was right. So again, it's all about balance. So we can use HCG. You can use medication like Clomid or Clomiphene. A little bit of controversy around the use of Clomid because of potential side effects. There's another medication called N-Clomiphene, which is kind of like the handsome cousin of Clomid, where it has all the benefits but doesn't have really the side effects. And so you want to balance natural production as much as you can. The other one is kind of balancing the estrogen. A lot of us are using supplements like DIM, D-I-M, to help metabolize estrogen. There are some guys that DIM doesn't work for, and they develop estrogen symptoms. Now, again, a lot of controversy right now about should you be using things like anastrozole? Should you be using estrogen blockers? Because you don't, because estrogen, like we talked about earlier, Sean, estrogen is important. So you don't want to crush it, but you don't want it to go out of control. And so there's varying thought processes in different camps in replacement therapy circles that some use estrogen blockers, some don't. It's dangerous. It's a cancer medication. You shouldn't use it. It's poison. Some say, well, you need to adjust diet to control estrogen, which is absolutely true. That the estrogen symptoms, the pill tenderness, that kind of stuff is actually an inflammatory response. It's not due to the estrogen. So, I mean, you can find these kind of opinion pieces all over from very reputable and very good doctors. And again, this is the kind of thing why it's important to sit down with the patient and talk to them and understand exactly what they need, because a good physician that manages hormones has to take all of this noise, all of this information that's out there from all these smart people, and you have to distill it down for the person sitting across from you in the chair.
Yeah. For what they really
need. That's the hard part of my job.
Yeah.
So, going to kind of get into some of the listener questions, things that are, I don't want to say like misconceptions, but you know, things people are wondering about. So is TRT permanent, or is it something you cycle? Is it a constant thing? Does it last forever? Do you have to be on it forever? How does that work?
Very good question. Very common question. And I will give you the response that I give to every single patient. In order to continue to have the benefit of the medication, you have to stay on it. This is no different. You have low testosterone is a chronic disease state, not unlike high blood pressure, high cholesterol, rheumatoid arthritis, etc. And so to manage a chronic disease state with medication, in order to control that disease state, you have to stay on that medication. It's no different with testosterone. You have to stay on testosterone in order to continue to have the benefit. There is an added twist to the testosterone in that it does affect the natural production. Mm-hmm. And so by going on testosterone over time, your body will become reliant upon the injection, or it will become reliant on the exogenous or the injectable testosterone. Yes, that is true. And if you stop, then your body will go back to where it was previously. That's why I tell my patients, if you do need to stop for whatever reason, do not stop cold turkey.
Yeah.
Work with me, call me. Let's figure out what's going on. And if you have to stop, let's do it in a responsible way where we wean down over the course of several weeks. So that gives your body a chance to restart. Or we use things like Clomid and Clomiphene or HCG to try and kickstart your natural production. But yeah, you need to, if you want the benefit of it, you have to stay on it. And, you know, I'm like I said, I'll be 44 in a couple weeks, and I'm going to be sticking myself the rest of my life. And I don't really care because I feel so much better.
Yeah.
And, you know, before I got on the phone with you, I did my injection. You know, for 5 to 7 seconds of discomfort twice a week, I can feel great. It's an easy trade off.
So, I have to add, do you do your own? Because I'm a big baby. I can do the HCG with the little needle. And I remember, like,
right,
we basically threw a party for me because I'm deathly afraid of needles. And and I got to where I can do that one, but I still can't do the testosterone shot. Do you do your own?
I do my own, and it's funny too because my wife is a physician as well, and I won't ask her to do it. I'm too scared, so I'm like, hey, I'll just do it myself. It's not. I mean, I've done so many injections on so many people, and you know, in my time as a surgeon, it doesn't bother me. But my dad's on injectable testosterone from his doctor, and he's the toughest guy I've ever met. You know, kind of one of these rags to riches stories, grew up on the streets of the west side of Chicago with nothing. and built himself into a very successful man by being tougher than everybody else, not working everybody else. And, you know, even at 84, my brother and I still don't mess with him because he's still tough and he's still strong and he's still, you know, he's still dad. Like, he hasn't lost his edge. But, you know, he tried to instill that toughness in my brother and I. Like, you know, there was nothing given to us. Everything was worked for. And he is deathly afraid of needles and injections. He hates them. He does his own shots.
Oh my God. I literally had my mom to sing to this guy when he first started taking his shots to distract him.
Oh, it's bad. She would like tap on the other cheek with her nail to like distract me and then hit me on the opposite side. It's awful.
Oh, dude, that's awesome. You're like a little kid getting a vaccine.
Yeah.
You distract them before you do it.
Exactly. And I don't even get a lollipop afterwards. Pretty disappointing.
No, you get a hug at least? Hopefully you get a hug. You don't even get a hug. That's rough, man.
No, so. No hugs. Usually it's a it's either a you're bleeding or you're good.
Buck up, buttercup.
Yeah.
Wow, I could just feel the love between you. It's overwhelming.
Yeah, that's how we do it in our household.
I did
want to ask you about...
Sounds like you.
Yeah. I did want to ask you about... You were talking, obviously, if you're on the TRT, you have to keep using it. I was curious about, you know, someone like Sean's situation where he's constantly in like a high stress environment where cortisol is constantly affecting him. When people are in affected by cortisol that much on a daily basis, have you found that, I don't know if you've come across it, but patients who are in those stressful environments, they go on TRT and then maybe they kind of back off a little bit. Have you found that their baseline numbers are just improved if they get out of those stressful environments? Or even if they don't, do you find that their baseline is a little bit higher than it was before? Or does it go back down, like, way, way low?
It depends. It depends on the person.
Okay.
I have had soldiers and first responders and law enforcement who have left that particular line of work, and I've been able to back off on their dose a little bit. But I have found that if, especially my high stress patients, if we don't monitor them very closely, because of the amount of stress that they're under, their level can become not unstable, but it can become difficult to control. Mm. It's one of the reasons that I do check in with my patients as frequently as I do, and I do check labs as frequently as I do, is to keep close tabs on guys, because problems in TRT are very, very easy to fix if you catch them early.
Yeah.
You know, not seeing a patient for a year if they're on testosterone is horribly irresponsible, because the amount of things that can go sideways in a year is staggering. The amount of things that can go sideways in the 3 to 6 months that I see my patients in labs, that's staggering as well. So it's a very individualized thing. And yes, it can very much depend on job, and baselines can fluctuate from season to season, from, you know, job to job and from day to day. So it can be somewhat difficult to manage if you don't know what to look for. And for better or for worse, I know what to look for, because I have so many patients, some that are, like I said, that are in your line of work, that I understand why. I'm not military. I'm not a first responder. I've never been in law enforcement. I have an inkling of understanding of what you guys go through, and I think that gives me insight to better manage patients.
Is there something My brain went to mush. Is there such a thing as too high of testosterone, and what effects can that have on the body if levels are too high?
There absolutely is too high. I had an issue with a patient today who misunderstood my dosing, was doing twice as much as they were supposed to do.
Oh, shit.
They felt worse. And I do this a lot because I have a lot of guys where if a little is good, more is better. Mm-hmm. That's not what it is in testosterone therapy. Yeah. You can have diminishing returns if you get too high. You can actually start to have the same symptoms you did if your testosterone is too low. Because if your testosterone gets 1800, 2000, 2200, the body's not meant to be there. And so you'll have fatigue, you'll have decreased energy, you'll have irritability, you'll have sleep disruption. And the other thing that you'll see is you'll see a significant increase in the amount of testosterone that's converted into estrogen. And so you'll have not only these symptoms that are from the testosterone being too high, but now you're having these issues with estrogen levels in the 150s, which is seven to eight times what it should be. So, you know, it's hard sometimes to discern which is which when you're talking to a patient whose levels are so out of whack.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can absolutely feel worse if your testosterone goes too high.
So if somebody's not feeling good, they're feeling off, they're not sure what's going on, how do they start the process of talking to you and checking their levels? And what is the process to start testosterone replacement therapy?
Well, it always starts with the lab. You got to start there, whether it's with me or whether it's with somebody else. I am fortunate that I can see patients over the phone in a multitude of different states. And so, you know, you can call my office and you can say, hey, look, you know, I'd like to become a patient. We go ahead and we send you a requisition to get your labs checked. You go get your blood drawn. I get the results. I take a look at them. And then the patient and I get on the phone and we spend some time together. We spend some time talking. You know, they come into my office. We spend some time talking. And I get a feeling for what's going on with them, their history, their symptoms, their medical issues. And I mirror that with the labs that I also have. And so I take them and I meld them together and we come up with a plan. The plan is always myself and the patient working together. The days of the paternalistic doctor kind of pointing their finger at the patient and saying, you're doing this because I'm the doctor, those are long gone, thank God. I insist that my patients and I work together, except for you, Sean. I don't like working with you. I just kind of
that's that's expected.
You don't fall. No, I'm kidding. But no, it's important that I know what's going on with you, the good and the bad. And I tell people, you know, if your treatment's not working, you've got to tell me.
Yeah, people. You're not going to hurt my feelings.
Exactly. You have to be honest with me because I can't help you. He'll be like, "Oh, doc, I feel great." And then, you know, 6-9 months later, you're like, no, actually, I don't feel any better. I'm like, well, we just wasted 9 months of time when if you told me 6 months ago you didn't feel better, I could have made some changes.
Well, that's too bad because I feel like that's also the stigma of society telling people, like, to be a certain way when they just need to let go of those walls and just kind of give in to the process and trust you.
I have a really good friend that says that all the time. They're like, you're a doctor. Just tell people, trust me. Well, yeah, trust me, but also trust me in the fact that I've, you know, spent the better part of almost 2 decades studying this. You know, I've been fortunate enough to treat hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of patients. And so, you know, I the experience that I have and the education and the ability that I have to kind of weed through the issues to get to the root cause, you know, I have to know what's going on. You got to be honest with me. And lying to me or not telling me the full truth, it's only hurting you as a patient and only making my job 10 times harder. So I tell guys, you know, be honest with me. I don't care. Believe me when I say there's nothing that I have not heard.
Yeah.
There's nothing that I have not been told at this point. I don't even, if people tell me crazy stuff and it doesn't even get a reaction out of me.
Yeah, they're all.
I've heard it 100 times already. And I'm like, yeah, okay, no, I can tell you. I can give you a list of other patients that have the exact same issues.
Right.
And they're like, really? I'm like, yeah, that's pretty common. Oh my God, I never thought so. You know, I was so embarrassed to tell you. Why? That's happened to me too.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah.
Oh,
okay. And then all of a sudden the walls come down. Now all of a sudden they're relaxed. And now I get this vomiting of information to me, you know, 30 minutes into the visit. This would have been great like 20 minutes ago. It would have saved us a whole lot of time.
It just takes that one thing though to get people to open up.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I want people to know, everything you've said the last couple minutes is not bullshit. I can, and I'm not blowing smoke. When I the first time I talked to you was, so I heard you on Drinking Bros podcast and love those guys. Got to actually hang out with them in July and spend some time with them when I was down visiting buddy in Austin. And I heard you on their show, and you know, I think I sent you an email and I talked to you and you were like, and all these fucking idiots from that hear me on Drinking Bros call me. And I was like, oh, this isn't like talking to a quote unquote regular doctor, but every time I talk to you, it's not like, here's your numbers, here's what we're going to do. It's how's the family, how's life, what's going on, how are you feeling? So for people out there listening, none of what you're saying is a lie. You really take the time to, and not just ask, but remember, I think last time I talked to you was, how's your daughter? She's almost 10 months now, right? Like, you remember these things. It, because this is such a personal thing, you really are this way. So if people are listening, this is real. Like, you do care and you do get into those things. So it's something that people can trust you and feel comfortable talking to you about.
Well, thank you. I take that as a tremendous compliment, because it's true. This is how I am. This is how I am all the time. How I'm talking to you right now. This is how I am with my patients. This is how I am at home. I mean, I'm sitting at my kitchen table right now. My 10-year-old keeps walking around the kitchen because she wants to listen to what I'm saying. So, you know, I mean, I'm a father too. You know, I'm a husband. I'm a regular guy. You know, I grew up in a regular family. You know, I'm the youngest of four brothers. Like, you know, there's no shame in my family. And so, you know, I was taught at a young age that you need to be a human being.
Yeah.
And I remember when I went away to medical school, my dad said something to me I'll never forget. He said, you're going to have the ability to help a lot of people, Gabe, and you need to be able to do it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't understand what he meant, but I do now.
Yeah.
And what he meant is, you have to be in a position to help people, whether that's helping them as being a regular human being, whether that's being available to people, whether that's making sure your services are affordable. You have to be there for people. And I took that to heart. That's how I run my practice. Some people don't like it. Some people don't like that I'm not super formal. I don't care.
Yeah.
I really don't. You know, then don't see me. But I'm gonna, you know, while I may not be super formal, I am extremely good at what I do. I take what I do extremely seriously. And, you know, when I'm with that patient, when I'm talking to that person, they have 100% of my focus. I'm not thinking about 15 other things. I am concentrating on that person, and I'm putting all of my energy and all of my knowledge and all everything I have into that human being at that moment, so that I can come up with the best possible plan so that person can get better. You know, a lot of times I'm the third, fourth, fifth doctor that these people see. And, you know, the approach that I take is very different, and it's intentional.
Totally.
And so I don't care if people don't like it. I really don't. But I have a pretty darn long waiting list at the moment of people that would like to see me. And, you know, and I'm humbled by that. And it's something that I'm very, very thankful for. But yeah, this is how it's on your right. This is how I am.
And I can, as a wife, I appreciate that. And I thank you, because when he was, you know, at the low point of, you know, feeling foggy and just not sleeping and all of these symptoms, I felt insanely helpless. Like, there was nothing that I can do to make him feel better or anything like that. So just the fact that you are so personal on a topic that is insanely sensitive to men in general, and the fact that it's like, it's this thing that is connected to a man's masculinity is what society says, you know what I mean? So it's mm-hmm. a very sensitive topic. So the fact that you are as personable as you are, I think it comes in handy as far as bringing down all of these guys' walls to go, hey, this is not uncommon. It is okay. Like, let it go and just let's get you better. So that's fantastic.
And you know, when people hear my story, and it's like, I mean, you guys have never met me in person, but I'm 6'5". Like, I'm a big dude. And, you know, people hear my story. Oh, my God, he played professional basketball. He was a neurosurgeon. And, you know, you've accomplished all these things already in your life. And, oh, wait, you have low testosterone too? Yeah, I do. And again, like you said, the walls just come down. They're like, oh, my God, you know, like, look at him and all the things that he has done and these accomplishments and all this other stuff. And, hey, man, he's just like me. Yeah, I'm just like you. I require a shot of testosterone twice a week. And I'm not ashamed of it, and I have no qualms telling people because it is what it is. And so I want to feel better. I want to be who I want to be and be the best of who I can be. This is what I got to do, and it's okay.
So if people out there listening and they're feeling these symptoms and they're not getting the answers they need and their doctor's giving them pushback, how do people get a hold of you?
First thing is you can call me. My phone number is 910-679-8534. Our website is frankinstitute.com. You can give people my email. It's askdrfrank, askdrfrank at frankinstitute. I answer it. The email goes to me. So, you know, if you can answer it midnight, it's me sitting at my kitchen table answering my email. I can do this. I can treat people over the phone. You know, I have a national account with LabCorp. People can go to any LabCorp in the country and I get the results. The pharmacy that I use can ship anywhere in the country. So it really opens up my ability to help people that, you know, maybe are in areas of the country that don't have doctors or, you know, the primary care doctors don't want to do this. It gives me the ability to reach out and help people, you know, in a much broader way.
So we want to thank you. We want to thank all the listeners for joining us for the final episode of season one of Balance and Manifest Your Rise to Greatness. We're really excited to have this as our final episode. So if you guys don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you listen to, do us a favor, a big favor, and share this episode to get this information out to as many men and women as possible, because wives, spouses, whatever might be seeing these symptoms in their husband, and they can share it, and maybe it'll, you know, give them some clarity and give them a direction to find some help. So if you guys could rate this, share it. I'd also like to thank our sponsor, Nine Realms Athletics, ninerealmsathletics.com. Use promo code MANIFEST for discount on your next order. And as always, for season two, we are open to suggestions. If you guys have any guests that have stories that can help change somebody's life, save somebody's life, if you guys are experts in a topic that you think is important and you want to share that information with listeners, go ahead and shoot us an email, ninerealmsathletics@gmail.com. Send us a DM, text me, call me, talk to me in the gym. We'd love to have you guys on. Dr. Frank, thank you so much for your time. I can't thank you enough for coming on here and sharing this information.
No, I appreciate it. Thank both of you. And like I said, I'm honored. And when you asked me to come on the podcast, I was blown away that you would think that much of me and give me the opportunity to do this. So just thank you both so, so much. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you. Oh.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening to this season. And we will catch you soon with season two.